Chapter 3, Crazy / Wildflowers. I think I was in the 8th grade when they told me I was crazy. Keela was in the 12th. Our younger siblings were too young to know what was going on. I had so many meetings with the guidance counselor about my outbursts in class, she decided it would be best for me to see an outside of school counselor. We didn't have money for that. To this day, I'm pretty sure I've never heard of any black folks in our community talk about psychological counseling. Mama whooped me a few times for acting out and sent me back to school. I kept getting in trouble, and finally, our guidance counselor convinced the principal to let an outside of school counselor come to the school to meet me. He was a tall, strong-looking man with a beard that was growing back but not quite grown. He smelled like Old Spice and wore these shiny brown shoes that I couldn't take my eyes off of. Come to think of it, I don't think the school ever asked Mama if it was okay that I talked to the man counselor. But when I told her about it, she wasn't too mad. Just told me not to be telling them all our business. The man asked me a lot of questions. I don't remember most of them. What I do remember are those shoes. I stared at the man's feet as he talked to me. He asked me about home and my feelings, if I ever got mad or sad, if I had trouble focusing, what I liked to think about when I wasn't in school. Sometimes I answered, and other times I just kept staring at those shoes. They were so shiny. I imagined they were two shiny tortoises, probably tortoise royalty on their island, and that they had been married for hundreds of years. They were greedy and always making the other tortoises bring them leaves and things to eat. Eventually, some men who looked just like the man counselor came to the island and were greeted by the royal tortoises. They asked to see all the other tortoises, and the two royals declined to show them. But after the man counselors offered to bring them lots of leaves and vegetables, they decided to lead them into the village. When they got to the village, the man counselors immediately went to work collecting the village tortoises. They put them in large buckets and dragged the buckets across the sand back toward their ships. The royals were scared and realized what a pitiful thing they had done. They begged the man counselors to stop, but nothing could slow them down. Finally, they offered up themselves, being the largest, oldest, and wisest tortoises, to be taken instead of all of their family, friends, and subjects. The men pondered for a moment and considered. They decided to agree to the deal on one condition. They had been planning to eat the tortoises they collected, but since they would be coming home with two shiny, beautiful, large tortoises instead of dozens of small, dusty ones, the two royals would become pets for their leader and have to do whatever he asked. The royals agreed immediately, were taken from the island, and never saw their village again. When they arrived in the land of the man counselors, they were taken to the leader. He was amazed at how shiny and sturdy their shells were. He decided he would like the royals to accompany him everywhere he went. He said that their tough shells would allow him to walk treacherous paths without fear of harm, and the beauty of the shells would attract. "Do you understand?" the man asked. "Huh?" "I'm asking you if you understand everything I was just mentioning." "Yes, sir, I understand," I lied. "Okay, well, I want you to take this note to your mother. My phone number is on it. Please have her call me as soon as possible." We were sitting at the dinner table later that night, and I figured it was best to tell Mama about the man counselor then. She told us countless times she ain't too much like to be bothered with us after dinner. After dinner was get ready for bedtime, and I didn't want to upset her then. All of us were around the table, most of my siblings with their heads down, eating like they were starving. In hindsight, they probably were. With four of us, food was often scarce. And even though Mama would tell us not to be in public acting like we hungry, she didn't get on us too much for it at home. Sometimes she would pop Daniel if he was eating with his hands, or call us wild animals for licking our plates clean, but she understood. I don't remember seeing her eat many of those nights. She would have a cup of coffee or tea and just watch us. As we got older, Keela started taking after her. She would give almost all of her food to Daniel and Marco before we ever got to the table. Her and Mama would end up watching all of us dive into our plates, sitting side by side, sipping their tea. Daniel, that's my youngest brother. He was a tiny kid with big eyes that were somehow still beady. His mouth was 50% of his face when he was younger, which meant that every time he smiled, he could light up an entire room. He was energetic, caring, and sensitive about stuff most little boys didn't think twice about. He loved butterflies. One time, he brought an orange butterfly into the house. It had taken a liking to him and hung out on his shirt for what seemed like hours. Mama let Daniel do all manner of silly things because he was such a sweet boy. He wasn't very sharp and had to take the special classes at school, but nobody bothered him too much. Whenever we had spaghetti, Daniel had his whole face in his plate, slurping away, only coming up to breathe and giggle. Marco was born a year before Daniel. He was a quiet boy with curly hair and a cautious gaze. He was very slow to speak most times. He was quiet for so long as a child, Mama thought he might not be able to ever talk. But once he grew up a little bit, we learned that he just liked to think a long time before he said anything. Marco didn't like spaghetti. He didn't like a lot of things, but he wasn't the type to protest. He pretty much just got along however he could. He didn't talk to me much, but he loved Keela. Kiki, he would call her. Marco would sit at her feet as she did homework, and he always walked her to the door when she went out with her friends. Marco loved to read and would sit for hours on end with his head in a book. His books were some of the only things he would talk about to anybody. I think it was easier for Mama to love Daniel because he was so kind and cheerful. She sure tried hard with Marco, though. Marco died that year when I was in the 8th grade and Keela was in the 12th. After he was gone, I could really tell that Mama had loved him. She took it harder than anybody, even Keela. Marco had walked to the bus stop alone one morning. He normally walked with Daniel because they went to the same school, but that day, Mama had to take Daniel to a doctor's appointment. Marco was a responsible kid, and she knew he could walk himself. But sometime before the bus came, he got hit by a car. Hit and run. We never found out who did it. We buried him on a Saturday. The cemetery he's in has a field of wildflowers. You couldn't make it to his grave without walking through 10,000 of them. They were there, all around his grave marker. Months later, Mr. Poe, one of our neighbors who used to give Marco books a lot, drew up this fancy headstone for him and showed it to Mama. It had all of the important information about his life and some fancy quote. Mama didn't like it. She said that Marco wouldn't have needed to write his own line to have one he appreciated. I wonder how she knew. But I believe that she did know. Keela didn't used to be too fond of me. We were opposites. I think Keela had to grow up too fast, playing second parent to three younger siblings. But I always had a deeper connection with Keela. The type of help I couldn't give myself, I could easily give her. She was like that with me too. I may be the only person who has ever felt comfortable, who she has ever allowed to challenge her. I would be the one to tell Keela that she wasn't getting enough sleep or eating right, that she didn't have to stress so much about this or that. Pride and authority made her feel threatened that a 14-year-old might understand a little bit more about life than an 18-year-old. But the truth is, I never understood more about life than Keela. I just saw things in a different way. We didn't figure that out until later, but once we did, our relationship got better. Keela looked about exactly the same as she does now, but her hair is a little longer. Her smile, though not often seen, was just as bright as Daniel's, but smaller. She was one of the most popular girls in school, and even though she didn't date, the popular guys would always say that she was pretty for a dark-skinned girl. Her and Mama didn't favor too much, but their mannerisms were eerily congruent. They looked most alike on two occasions, when they argued with each other, and when they sat at the dinner table, sipping from their cups, watching the rest of us eat. Pretty much everything else about them was different, though. Mama looked like all of us, Or none of us, maybe. We all looked like pieces of her, I reckon. She was the only one of us that was caramel colored, and the only one that was chubby. But she said that's because she had had so many babies. Her hips and legs were thick and toned. She would tell us how she ran track in high school and almost made it to the state meet if it weren't for Dorothy Jensen and those new shoes her parents had bought her. Mama wore the same shoes all through high school. All Mama's stories had some kind of Dorothy Jensen in them, but she didn't seem too bitter. She would just lean her head back and laugh, covering her teeth with her hand. Her laugh was like summer rain. Mama had a wide, flat nose and square teeth, and her cheeks were fat and freckled. Her chubby face made her eyes squinty. She had a mass of kinky hair sprouting like a bush from her head, and she usually tied it up with some fancy colored scarf or bandana. She told us that she used to be slim like Keela. "I used to look just like your sister," she would say, with this far-off gaze, almost like she could see the old her. I still had to give Mama the letter. She was close to finishing her coffee, so I slipped the crumpled paper from the man counselor out of my pocket and cleared my throat. "Mama, they gave me this at school. I think I'm in trouble." I slid the note across the table to her. Everybody kept eating, and Mama grabbed the paper, unfolding it with one hand. She didn't seem too surprised at my comment, probably on account of how I was always getting in trouble, but I waited for a more emotive response. She read the note over the top of her coffee without ever putting her cup down. It took her a long time to read it. Longer than I thought it should have, but I don't know. Not everybody reads fast. "What did you tell that man?" Mama finally finished the note. "Not too much, Mama. Just what we talked about. I wasn't in there telling no business. He was just asking me how I feel and what I think about." Mama furrowed her brow and pursed her lips. "They saying you crazy, boy. They done wrote a list of things in here what's wrong with you. Personality something or another. Say you got an attention problem too. They want me to bring you to a man's office so they can do some more tests on you and give you some drugs to take. You want to go down there? You think that's what you need?" I didn't know what any of it meant. Mama's questions weren't genuine. She wasn't asking me what I thought I needed. She was asking me if what I thought about the man counselor's note made more sense than what she had told me 1,000 times, which was that I needed to straighten up and act right. In truth, it didn't make more sense. So I didn't feel bad telling her no. No sooner had I expressed disinterest in going to the man counselor's office than my mother flung the note back across the table at me, grabbed Daniel's plate, and headed to the kitchen to begin cleaning up. "Good. We ain't got no money for drugs, nohow," she said, sauntering off. I looked down and saw words I didn't know, like neurotic and psychosis. I didn't look them up, though. I lifted my head to Keela staring at me blankly. Depression would come later in life. I would eventually learn for myself what the man counselor's note had meant and how many psychological issues I had been struggling with even since childhood. At the time I learned about myself in adulthood, it seemed that I was probably too damaged to ever make a full recovery. And I ain't never been too keen on taking medicine, so I figured I was doomed. I learned that I had all these issues after Mama passed away. Not knowing where I could turn made everything else that much harder to deal with. I always knew I was different, but I never figured I was broken. Broken from jump, like I never had a chance to be normal. I hadn't known. Even if I would have known, what was there to do? That same night, after dinner and dishes, Keela called me, Daniel, and Marco into her room. She normally didn't like us in there, especially not to sleep. We took up too much space in the bed. Keela had her own room on account of needing girl privacy and because she's the oldest. Usually, I shared a room with Marco and Daniel, who slept on bunk beds. I never liked beds too much, and Mama bought me a comfy sleeping bag and extra pillows, and so it worked out that the apartment we lived in only had 2 rooms. Mama slept downstairs in the living room on the couch bed that folded out. Every so often, Keela would try to get Mama to live in her room so she could live downstairs. But Mama always said she preferred to be in the living room. Mama kept a pistol down there and wanted to always keep watch on the door, especially during the nighttime when break-ins happened more frequently in our neighborhood. We all filed into Keela's room with our pajamas on and got into the bed. She had a lamp on and gave us all a hug and a kiss on the forehead before we laid down. Her eyes were red and watery. I wanted to ask her why she had been crying, but something told me it wasn't a good time. Even after we turned out the lights, I could hear her sniffling and holding back groans. I imagined the tears rolling down her face in the dark, her wiping them on the pillowcase before she had to believe they were real. Once, before I fell asleep, I reached out and touched her foot while she was sniffling. The room went silent, and after a couple moments, I felt the tension go out of her leg. I figured she went to sleep after that, because I didn't hear too much more out of her. I reckon I went to sleep pretty soon after that myself. Keela had a full-size bed. She slept on the left side, next to the alarm clock. Daniel slept on the right. I laid horizontally across the foot of the bed, trying to avoid Keela's feet. Marco slept in the middle, and we all laid around him, like wildflowers.